What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and the Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Joining us now is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, appreciate you for joining us. Always appreciate our chats every single week. So after the game on Sunday, one of the weirdest, strangest, probably most, you know, heartbreaking Titans losses that I've seen in quite some time. Two blocked punts, missed extra point, took it to overtime. Weird game. After the game, Will Levis said he thought that that was the worst game he had played in a Titans uniform. What was your evaluation of his play?
I don't know that I would say that. I mean, obviously, I think there are plays left out in the field, and I think sometimes as a player you can leave the field, especially in a close game. And, you know, in close games you can look at, individual plays and think, well, shoot, if I would have made that play, maybe the outcome's different. Or if I hold on to the ball here, you know, then, or I escape here, then I can make a play. And so, you know, I think sometimes just the nature of that position in a closely contested game, or maybe I make a throw and so we eventually score versus, kicking a field goal. So I think when that happens, it makes the bad plays feel bigger. I can't say that I would have had that be, you know, to say like that's the worst I've seen him play in a football game, because I thought there were still elements of good stuff,
right,
you know, by him in that football game.
I'm with you. I thought that there were a lot of good things that we saw from Will Levis on Sunday. I wasn't willing to make, you know, as harsh of a criticism of Will Levis, but there is one thing that I've picked up on the last few weeks when things haven't been going very well, and it's Will Levis's willingness to take the blame and willingness to give credit to everybody else, where he acknowledges and takes accountability for things that go wrong for the football team. There was another thing that we saw on Sunday where he and D-Hop kind of went back and forth in a little bit of a heated exchange. I thought, okay, rookie going up against, you know, having this conversation with a, you know, future Hall of Famer in DeAndre Hopkins. What do you make of Will Levis and kind of his off-the-field behavior, decorum, whatever word you want to use?
No, I think it's a great point. Look, I think one of the things that, like, was impressive to me this past weekend was hearing C.J. Stroud, you know, talk about how disappointed he was for Tank Dell, who was injured in the game. And I thought, well, look, there's leadership associated with that. And I do think that there's leadership, you know, that you can attach to a quarterback when, you know, he's taken ownership for maybe how he didn't play as well as he wanted to play in a close game. That's true. And then in terms of, reactions between young players and older players, especially older star players, I do say this, and I think I saw a little bit of it last night with Jake Browning, for the Bengals in a game where, you know, he was a little frustrated with his center, and he kind of got on his center about, you know, the snap and getting the snap back to him in time as they were kind of dealing with some delay game situations. And I will say, I'm always impressed when, not to say that, like, I want to see conflict between, you know, a younger player and an older player, because I do think you've got to be careful with that. But I do think that there is something important to say, like, no, I'm in this position, I'm in the huddle, I'm the one talking, and look, it doesn't matter that you're going to go to the Hall of Fame and I'm just trying to prove that I can play. Like, this matters to me too, and I know that you know this matters to me, which is why I can challenge you. So I do think from a leadership perspective, you've definitely hit the nail on the head in terms of that's also a good sign from, you know, things we've seen from Will Levis.
Well, you're absolutely right about that, Tim, and especially when the veteran guy sees that the young guy has something in him. Like, this guy can play. You don't mind that, whether it be constructive criticism or, you know, just going at a guy, because, you know, ultimately both of you guys have the same goal in mind, and that is to be productive. And it's not like I'm trying to get you to do something that you can't do. We both look at it the same way. It was just this particular play. You thought one thing, I thought another. I'm the quarterback. I should be able to come to you and tell you whether you're a 15-year veteran or you're a rookie like me. We should be able to communicate. So I think that is good to have on your team, because ultimately, like I said, you're all looking and going the same way. The boat is rowing the same way for the both of you. So if you're going to have that type of dialogue, then, you know, let it be that. But once the play is over with, you're done with it. You got more plays to play and more things to do.
And I think it speaks probably to, one, it's a healthy environment, like mm-hmm. exactly what you're describing. And then, two, the confidence of the young player. You know, I think sometimes guys act like they're confident. Like Zach Wilson would be a good example of this. You know, that he's acting like he's confident, but it really doesn't feel like it. You know, I think we probably got the glimpse and Hard Knocks on some of that stuff. But, like, you know, acting confident and actually being confident are two different things. And, you know, I think that in some of those environments, when like with the interaction that's being described with Levis, like, to me, that is, like, he is confident in kind of, you know, not only his ability, but what he saw, what he thinks needs to happen. And look, that's a really good sign. I've seen a lot of quarterbacks, you know, not feel that way. And really what they do is they go find another quarterback and they're like, man, you see the angle he took out of that? Like, why? Well, that doesn't do any good. Like, you need to go talk to the guy that was running
around. I wasn't out there running around. Go talk to him. We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Tim, early in the week, well, yesterday, we were talking with TD, and I asked TD, are you concerned? Because I think Will Levis is doing a good job. It's not great. It's not bad. He's just working with what's in front of him. But I am worried that because of what's in front of him, he may start to develop some bad habits. There's been, over the course of the last couple of weeks, where, you know, because he's not getting the protection, he's throwing off his back foot a lot. And even when sometimes he does have the protection, he gets outside the pocket or something, he's still throwing off his, like, he's throwing off balanced throws. It's like throwing it and lofting in the air. And I just wonder, is he developing some bad habits? And would you be concerned if you were the head coach or the quarterback's coach because of what's in front of you, that now my quarterback is starting to develop some bad habits? He has the arm strength to get it there, but you don't need to develop those habits.
Yeah, I think that, yes, I think you always have to be concerned about bad habits. So, like, whether it's, look, Will Levis or Patrick Mahomes, I think you always need to be cognizant of that and try to protect against that. And so I think anybody that's coaching him needs to, you know, always have that in mind. And so I would think that it would. Now, you know, there's another element of that, which is, look, you don't, because he's super talented, especially as a thrower, and like you look at that one touchdown, he kind of drops the arm angle and, you know, makes a throw, and you're like, ooh, okay, like we'll take that. Like, you know, nice job. You know, so you don't want to take away, a little bit like happened with Ben Roethlisberger and happens with Aaron Rodgers and some of these guys that have a lot of, you know, ability. You know, you don't want to stifle their ability to just be great athletes and playmakers. So you do that. But I think to what you're saying in that, you know, protection being the culprit in terms of some of the ways that you play. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you've got to be very careful with that. So, you know, every time you go play a team, you have to be aware of, all right, this is who we have playing offensive line. This is who they have playing defensive line. What does that mean for the clock in my head in terms of how long I can hold on to the football? And look, we're going to go into the game with an expectation of we might have a hard time holding up. Or, hey, we're going into this football game thinking, look, we're going to be okay. We're going to be able to give it another beat, most likely. And so I think I would really want to coach through it like that, rather than being in a situation where it's like, hey, you've got nothing in front of you. It's going to be chuck and duck, you know, the whole game. Like that's, I think you do need to protect yourself against that.
Now we witnessed the debacle of the Tennessee Titans special teams. And we know, you know, the short time that Vrabel's been here right now, the last 5 years, he usually doesn't make moves within the season in regards to his coaches. But do you think that was the right move to fire Aukerman? And if you believe that is the right move, how does it affect the team moving forward from a special team standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think how it affects the team is, I mean, you know this, when people get fired, it puts everybody on alert, right? And so I think that, you know, when that happens, I think it gets everyone's attention. This is pro football, and so it's just like it's his job, and, you know, to get everyone ready, the guys that are playing on special teams, it's their job. And I think probably, you know, the block punts are one thing, right? Like those can happen, I guess, when you have more than one in a game. You know, then you can feel like, you know what, maybe we weren't as prepared. We didn't have people in the right spots. I do think when you have, you know, you have a backup situation where, you know, like you have a holder who's not typically a holder, and you have a, you know, you have that, and that doesn't go well. Unfortunately, it felt like there were a lot of events that maybe should have been handled better. And ultimately, yeah, I mean, somebody has to answer for it. And so, like, do I think it's the right move? Like, I don't know. It's hard for me not being in there every day to say, like, look, it's the right thing when somebody loses their job. But I do know just with what happened and how the NFL typically works, it was not a surprise for me. And I think it's more, the missed extra point. Like, to me, like, that's almost as much of a part of it, because I think that's one of the areas where you can show, like, how locked in you have everybody.
What is your philosophy? Tim Hasselbeck is with us. What's your philosophy on midseason coaching changes?
I would say that they typically don't help. I would say that they, like you're saying, assistant coaches or head coaches?
Assistant coaches. Totally, yeah,
assistant
example.
Coaches are,
yeah,
different with a head coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like a head coach, like, I think people do it because you want to evaluate somebody. Like, here's a good example, Washington. Like, it doesn't feel like Ron Rivera is going to be back.
Right.
Okay? Eric Bieniemy's name's been rumored around for a bunch of years. Like, to me, in Washington, like, it probably makes sense to say, like, Eric Bieniemy, you're the interim head coach. Let's see what happens, because you might be the next head coach of this football team. Like, to me, I feel like that makes sense. We're in the middle of the season. You know, when you do it to assistants, you know, I think that it has to be something where the assistant just, he was not interacting well with other coaches. You weren't getting the best out of other coaches. I think that matters. And then obviously how the interaction with the players go. So that's what I would feel about, you know, assistant coaching changes during the season. And I think if that's what you're running into, then I think it's okay to make the move.
And one thing that we've been kind of tossing around is who dictated this decision. What was the decision motivated by? Was it Vrabel looking at all the special teams woes on Sunday and saying, I got to do something about this. This is unacceptable. Or could it be Titans owner Amy Adams Strunk looking at the same special teams that we were all watching on Sunday and saying, we need to do something about this? Her picking up the phone and calling Mike Vrabel and say, we need to make a change. Do you think owner motivated decisions like that are wrong? Or are they right? Or just kind of your thoughts, yeah, on that, on potentially owner-motivated, you know, personnel or coaching decisions?
Here's what I'd say. Owner-motivated, you know, changes, I actually don't think are wrong. I know some people are like, oh, these owners need to let the football people do the football stuff and this and that. And I get that. And I think that most do. But I also think that, like, look, if you're the owner of the team and a lot of the criticism is going to come back on decisions you make in terms of coaches that you hire and stuff, like, you're the boss, you know? Like, I don't have an issue with that. I really don't. I think it's probably a somewhat like an unpopular, take on it, you know, because I think there are a lot of people that feel like, hey, football people, like, you do the football decisions. But I think there's also an element in some of these football decisions that are people, perception, and leadership decisions. And I think oftentimes the ownership can provide good leadership through those things. So I think so I'm actually fine with that. Now, you know, I would not want the ownership influence to be because, you know, they're reading message boards and everyone's, you know, unhappy with, hey, we just run the ball on, you know, on first down all the time or whatever. Like that type of stuff, you know, I obviously want it to be educated. And I think probably more often than not it is.
Now, two things I want to throw at you quickly, Tim, and it's outside of the Tennessee Titans. One, the Kansas City and who did they play? I forget.
Green Bay
game. I mean, when is it going to get to a point where the league really start addressing the bad officiating? And then two, what do you think of C.J. Beathard? Because now he's going to be the quarterback moving forward. For the Jacksonville Jaguars. We don't know how long Trevor Lawrence is out. It wasn't a break. It was just a sprain. But they're in the playoff. They're in a playoff hunt. Mm-hmm. They're trying to win a division. Houston is right there with them. So what do you think about C.J. Beathard, and can he hold the fort while Lawrence is out, and then officiating?
Yeah, so I'll do the officiating one first. It was an awful missed call. There would have been 42 seconds left, ball on the 5-yard line for Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I don't think that there's been a more creative offense in the NFL than we've seen from the Kansas City Chiefs under Andy Reid inside the 5-yard line. Like, they have been incredible. And so it's really a shame that that happened, because that was about to be an amazing comeback. In terms of C.J. Beathard, I actually think he's a very good player. You know, as you look around league, you know, not every backup situation is going to be a perfect situation. I think they've actually kind of put themselves in a pretty good situation in Jacksonville by having him. He's a guy that has starter experience. He has experience in a like offense from his time with the 49ers. And I think he certainly had moments. He's a good athlete. I think he's got good players around him, which helps. And I thought even last night coming in, you know, he caught a little bit of a break on the fumble that his team was able to recover. But look, he led his team to, game tying and game winning opportunities. And I think that's a really encouraging sign. So I guess I would just say from that standpoint, I don't know how long Trevor's out, but is he good enough to make it work? Yeah, I think he is.
Now, Jake Browning, I mean, he had a phenomenal night as well.
Cincinnati, and the initials JB, my goodness.
Hey, they're doing well. So what do you think of him as a quarterback moving forward? Because these three teams are fighting, at least these two teams, Jacksonville and Cincinnati, are fighting for a playoff berth. Let me ask you this better. Which team you think is in a better position to win with their backup quarterback, Cincinnati or Jacksonville?
Yeah, I think Jacksonville is, but I think Cincinnati is a very QB-friendly offense. Mm-hmm. I think they're well-coached, and I think seeing that last night was like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. Like, you maybe uncovered something here. And, like, I love when backups get an opportunity. They play, they go off, and then next thing you know, it's like, 15 years later, they've had this amazing NFL career. I mean, I love it. And I feel like Jake Browning maybe, took a step in that direction last night. But I think that just looking at, the division, I think the experience, I like Jacksonville's situation, maybe a little bit better. And I will say, and I don't know if you guys felt this way, not that it was a national championship game, But I just had to laugh a little bit. I'm seeing this, and like, we see backups all the time come in and play and play well and maybe end up better than the starter. And I thought, wow, I can't believe Florida State's trying to get that opportunity. Because you just never
Brad,
know.
You're going to
come in off the bench and throw for 350 yards.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to get your thought on that, Tim, somebody who calls the ACC games every week. What do you make of the committee's decision to leave an undefeated Power 5 conference wow. champion Florida State out of the CFP?
Yeah, I didn't like it. And not to say that, like, I guess I just didn't like it. I didn't like how it was like, yep, Washington's in. You know, they're undefeated. They're in. Michigan, hey, they're undefeated. They're in. And then, you know, Florida State's not. And I get that everyone's saying – there's two things I think that maybe bothered me in the talk about it was – one, I felt like during the ACC championship game, there was almost like this lack of awareness that, like, Brock Glenn was not going to be the starting quarterback in the college football playoff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, Tate Rodemaker would have been back. So, like, whatever offense we were looking at against the number 14 team in the country, like, that wasn't going to be what it was. So I think that was like an unfair characterization of, like, what Florida State would be in a playoff. You know, and I think the fact that they could win with their quarterback only throwing for 55 yards against a good football team, like, that probably speaks, you know, higher volumes of the type of team they were. And then I would just also say this, you know, one of the things the committee said was, you know, part of our rankings and our evaluation is, like, who you are now and who's available to you, right? Like, that was clear. Well, somebody would have to explain to me how when Jim Harbaugh was not available, why did that not affect where Michigan was ranked? Because he was not available. They barely got past Maryland.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't reflected in the rankings that Jim Harbaugh wasn't available. The head coach, is he important to the team? Probably. So I just felt like the inconsistency in that didn't make sense to me. And I think that, look, I'm not saying like, hey, Texas or Alabama or Georgia, that this should have happened. I think that they should have been in, and then whatever you need to decide between Texas and Alabama and Georgia, go ahead and decide. But I don't know why that is a Florida State issue.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Tim. Inconsistency mm-hmm. with the College Football Playoff Committee and what they prioritize. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, appreciate you. As always, we'll chat next week.
You got it. See you guys.
Awesome. Yep. Thanks, Tim. All right, that's what I want to get into coming up next. College Football Playoff. Alabama, a one-loss SEC champion in over an undefeated conference champion, Florida State. Our thoughts on it. Question, did the committee get it right? We'll get into that coming up next and your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 1025-1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, DeMace. Hey, tune into 93.3 Classic Hits tonight for MTSU men's basketball. The Blue Raiders will take on Missouri State at the Murphy Center with pregame beginning at 6 o'clock and tip-off at 6:30 p.m. Coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic app and at 93.3classichits.com. So the College Football Playoff Final Four is in. Man. Michigan at 1, Washington at 2, Texas at 3, and the much-anticipated number 4 goes to Alabama after they take down Georgia in the SEC Championship game. DeMace, what was your initial reaction when you saw that Florida State was left out of the top 4?
Well, when they put...
First undefeated Power 5 conference champion to ever be left out of the College Football Playoff.
When they, because they do it for theatrics. They do one and then they do two because those are typically, those are no-brainers. One and two are no-brainers. So they throw, you know, Michigan up there. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, we know. They throw Washington
expected
at two.
That.
It's like, okay, we expected that. The minute they put Texas at 3, I said Florida State's not getting in.
Mm-hmm.
Because how do you take a Power 5 team that just won their conference and not put them at 3? They're undefeated. They automatically should go to 3. Hell, they probably should have went to 2. But that's neither here nor there. I'm not complaining about who's 2 because whether you're going to put Washington or Florida State, it didn't matter to me.
Right.
But the minute they put Texas at 3, I said Florida State's out. And that just tells you that they don't care about what you do during the season. It has nothing to do with, you know, what you do during the season, because if it did, Florida State accomplished everything that they were supposed to do. They went out and beat teams. They beat, what, two top 10 teams. They beat three, you know, teams. They beat two teams in the SEC, or was it two or three teams in the SEC? They did everything that they were supposed to do.
Beat two SEC teams.
Uh-huh. They did everything they were supposed to do. Even while having a third-string quarterback, their defense stepped up even bigger than what they played during the season. The last two games, they played lights out, that defense, because they didn't have their starting quarterback. And my thing is, if you're going to say, well, we didn't put Florida State in because their third-string quarterback, well, their third-string quarterback wasn't going to be playing.
And the third-string quarterback also beat a top 15 Louisville team.
Exactly. And he was the quarterback of a team that beat a top 20 team in the ACC championship game. So to me, what you essentially told, what you told everybody else, listen, outside of an ACC team, outside of an SEC team or possibly a Big Ten team, what you do don't matter. That's basically what they said. You went 12-0 as a Power 5 team.
13-0.
You had a tough schedule. Mm-hmm. You beat two SEC teams. And they still said, you know what? You don't get a prize. You get left out of the whole thing. You went undefeated. You get left out of the whole thing.
So Boo Corrigan is the chairman of the college football playoff.
And his excuse, his reasoning was just, dude, you shouldn't even said anything.
Dumb and inconsistent.
Yeah, you shouldn't have said nothing.
He says, we want the best four teams in, not the four most deserving teams. So when he said that, this is actually a couple of weeks ago. When he said that, I'm thinking someone's going to get screwed here. I don't think that the top four satisfies either of those classifications. Because if you're going to get the best four teams in, I think Georgia's one of the best four teams in the country. So you want the best four, put Georgia in.
Yeah.
Over a Washington or a Texas, whoever it might be. I think Georgia's better than both those teams. Mm-hmm. Or the four most deserving. Well, you definitely didn't put in the four most deserving teams because Florida State did everything that they possibly could have done. They won every game on their schedule, including scheduling a very good non-conference Power 5 team at LSU at the beginning of the year, beat them, beat a Florida team with their backup quarterback on the road. And I understand Florida is not really anything to write home about, but still, you beat everyone on your schedule. You won your conference championship game. And what I get so sick and tired of, people telling me, well, Alabama would blow Florida State out on a neutral site. Really? Would they? I don't know that. Because Oregon, I thought Oregon was going to beat Washington. So did Vegas. Oregon was a 9.5-point favorite over Washington. Washington was the better team for four quarters. I thought that Georgia was going to beat Alabama. They didn't. I thought that Louisville was going to beat Florida State with their third-string quarterback, but they didn't. So what I think would happen, it doesn't matter. What matters is what happens on the field. And you could say, well, Florida State didn't look very good against Louisville. Alabama didn't look very good against an Auburn team that got boat, or excuse me, an Alabama team that got boat raced by Auburn the week before. So with the whole coulda, shoulda, woulda, this would happen, that would happen, that doesn't matter. That's the reason why we play football games. If we want to go off, you know, the playoff based off of who we think the best teams in the country are, then let's just go ahead and make a top 25 at the beginning of the season. Let's not even play a full 12-game schedule. Let's just go ahead and have those four teams battle it out. I think it's absolutely ridiculous, and I think it undermines the regular season.
Yeah, it does, and you know you feel for the Florida State players because they wanted at the beginning of the season. Your goal is to what? Put yourself in a position to be in a college football playoff. Handle your business. So when it's time to decide business, you've done everything you needed to do.
Right.
Basically. So you're telling those 100-some-odd kids, 50, 60 of them on scholarship, that, hey, y'all went through this gauntlet of season, you know, and y'all lost your starting quarterback, but this defense stepped up big. That shows me that this is a complete team. This is a football team. Like, what is the old saying? When someone gets up, when someone gets hurt, the next guy steps up. next man up, let's keep it rolling. Well, it was the next man up for Florida State, and their defense picked up the slack. Their defense started to play better than they had played all season, and that was a damn good defense anyway.
Yeah.
But they stepped up, and they played even better. So what you're telling those kids, all this, the last 7 months of the year, the two-a-day practices, the, you know, having to stay up at school while everybody else is at home, the going to class, then having to practice, then having to study, the beating everybody on your schedule, all of this stuff, oh, it didn't matter. It don't matter because your starting quarterback got hurt.
And the argument is, well, you know, Florida State is missing their best player. No, they're not. Jared Verse is Florida State's best player, and their edge rusher. Jordan Travis isn't even Florida State's best offensive player. Keon Coleman, their wide receiver.
They got some damn good wide receivers.
Is their best offensive player. Look, losing your quarterback, absolutely, it hurts your team. And that's not me undermining Jordan Travis and his abilities and what he's done all season long. But he is not their best player. And I think that, let's say, Jalen Milroe got hurt in the middle of the season. And with Alabama's backup quarterback, Tyler Buckner or Ty Simpson, whoever it is, if they step in and they beat Georgia in the SEC championship game, what are we doing? We're singing the praises
of
Nick Saban. Look what he has done with the backup quarterback. Instead, with Mike Norvell in Florida State, we're saying, sorry, you did everything you were supposed to do, but still not quite good enough. Let's get your thoughts on it. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tristan is on the line with a thought on Florida State. What's up, Tristan?
Hey, Florida State deserved to be in. Like, if I was the third-string quarterback, I would have been, like, toast at Florida State. Like, that quarterback is from Tennessee. He's a freshman and did 55 yards. Like, I know he missed throws, and he didn't throw an interception. And Florida State, like, praises to them, like going undefeated. That's hard to do in college football nowadays. And Alabama looked awful versus USF. And these people on this committee should be fired, and ESPN should be looked into. Like, I mean, Kirk Herbstreit is like, that guy is not an announcer. He's more like getting paid $11 million just to praise Alabama.
Hey, and I like Kirk Herbstreit.
I like Kurt.
He's good at what he does.
Yeah.
I don't think so. He's getting paid by China, which supports Marxism.
All right. All right. Thank you, Tristan. Thank you for your call. That's where I'm going to cut it off there.
We can't. You're going down a rabbit hole that we don't need to be going
down.
We
don't need to be doing
that. Yeah, we're talking about college football and Florida State getting snubbed, not about other stuff.
And look, Alabama isn't not deserving.
Yes.
Alabama, I think, is absolutely deserving. The turnaround that they've had this season, they beat Georgia, the best team in the country. Look, this isn't my anti-Alabama propaganda. My problem is with the inconsistencies of the college football playoff. Because the argument that's being made is on a neutral site, Alabama would beat Florida State. Which, first of all, we don't know that. There is no way to know that. Second, you're Vegas. Georgia, Florida State playing on a neutral site, which they will in the Orange Bowl here in a few weeks. Who's favored?
I think Georgia's favorite.
I agree. I think Georgia would be favored.
I think it's to a point now with Florida State. And I know that the coach is going to try to do his best to get the best out of his players. But this team is just like, I wouldn't be surprised if you know, I wouldn't have been surprised if Florida State said, you know what? We don't want to go to no bowl game because y'all stiffed us so bad. We don't want to go to a bowl game. Keep the money, pick somebody else. We're going to decide to do something else with our players. Because to me, that shows you that hard work doesn't mean anything in college football. Hard work, what you do on the field, is not – sports is supposed to be about those that are actually on the playing field. Dictating wins and losses.
It's games.
Exactly.
Indisputable
games.
Wins
Absolutely.
And losses.
Absolutely. We can look at them. You won, you lost. And yeah, there was stuff in the middle. I get it. But you won, you lost. That's what sports is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be, okay, I do my job. I do what I'm supposed to do. But then there's 12 people that decide whether I get in or not. After I've done I did everything y'all asked me to do. That's like, you know, I'm telling my son, get good grades, do this, and then I get you this. And he comes to me and said, Dad, I did everything. And I said, well, no, I'm not going to get it. No, I'm going to get this instead. And my son would look at me like, Dad, but you said if I did all this, I get this.
Right.
That's basically how they feel. It's like, these are the criteria. Mm-hmm. We played within the criteria. We did everything that y'all asked us to do. And then all of a sudden, y'all ripped the rug from right up underneath us because the starting quarterback is not going to be able to play. Not the backup. The backup will be able to play, which the backup is good. And we got a lot of guys surrounding that backup that can make up for any deficiencies he may have. Oh, and by the way, our defense is damn good. You know, so to me, I'm not going to sit here and say Florida State would lose to Alabama. Because Alabama offense doesn't look like a juggernaut.
Alabama was a 4th-and-31 away
exactly.
from losing to Auburn.
Absolutely.
And Auburn lost to New Mexico State.
So anybody that sits here with a straight face and say, oh, Florida State would have lost to Alabama. No, they wouldn't, because it took a last second play to win an Auburn game, you know, that they all – for intents and purposes, they lost that. That game was Auburn's to lose, and Auburn lost it.
And that Auburn team's pretty good.
Exactly. But you can't sit here and definitively say, oh, Florida State would lose on a neutral site. Florida State would lose to Alabama. I'm going to say, I'm going to call bull on that. I am.
But here's my problem, because if you would have used that argument, fine.
And I'm a huge Alabama fan.
I'm not. But using that argument, I think today, neutral site, mm-hmm. Georgia would beat Florida State.
Yeah.
Then why is Florida State ranked above Georgia? Under that logic, if you want to use that logic of fantasy land football, of we think we, holier-than-thou college football playoff committee, thinks that Florida State would lose to Alabama, well, I would say that I think Georgia would beat Florida State. Then why is Georgia 6? And I know we focus on the top 4 mm-hmm. and probably 5 because 5 is the one that we view as, you know, the one just on the outside looking in. But the rest of those rankings matter mm-hmm. because I think that the College Football Playoff Committee should prioritize the same things. That you can't just say, okay, well, strength of schedule. Yeah, this team has the best strength of schedule, so you should be the number 1 team. Mm-hmm. But this team doesn't have quite as strong of a schedule as the number 3 team, but we like how this team passes the eye test. You can't use all of these different metrics mm-hmm. just to justify one team versus another when you're using different metrics for different teams. It doesn't work like that.
Well, it seems like they just moved the goalposts on Florida State.
Yeah.
They said these are the criteria. Oh, y'all did everything within the criteria. Okay, mm-hmm. now we're gonna add something else to it. We're gonna add who's the better team right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but didn't we do what we were supposed to do throughout the whole season?
Yeah.
You know, we went 13-0. Shouldn't we be able to determine whether we're better than the, you know, fourth team in the rankings or the second team or the third team?
Right.
Shouldn't we be able to decide that on the field?
Yeah.
Not in the boardroom with 12 other people?
That's how it should be.
Yes.
Decided on the field. It's games. Let's get your thoughts on this coming up next. Caroline Willie, D. Mace. Preds fans, don't miss tomorrow night's Smashville live show at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue at 6 p.m. You can see your Predators star players up close and personal. Get autographs and pictures. This week's special guests are Cody Glass and Colton Sissons. Smashville Live is brought to you by the Black Abbey Brewing Company.
We saw your reaction on television when Alabama was placed into the number 4 spot. I was just wondering if you could tell us what was going through your mind in that moment when you put your head down, and then what you said to the team afterwards?
You know, I was just hurt for our players. I mean, to be honest with you, that was, it was one of the tougher moments I've had to experience. And, you know, just for all that they've done, you know, you talk to a team about, you know, responding to adversity, getting up and going to give all that you can to be able to find a way to win a college football game. And, you know, like Coach Smart said, it is hard. I mean, it's hard to do. It's hard to, especially when you face some of the adversities that we've had, you hear this year, whether it's injury or just different things to overcome. But, it's all part of it. And, you know, as we tell our team all the time, you know, your truest identity shows up in times of great adversity. And we faced it, and, you know, they put it on display. So that was really that feeling in the moment.
That was Florida State head coach Mike Norvell. voice sounds like it is struggling.
Sounded and like an elf. Ship. I mean, what? And that's the problem. You know, that's the thing that, as a competitor, it hurts the most, because there's nothing coach can do. Mm-hmm. There's nothing he can do.
And what's he supposed to say to those kids?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's not he can go out and speak against it, but it's not going to change mm-hmm. what has happened. He can go out and shame the 12 people or 11 people that are in that room. How many is it? 12, 13?
I think it's 12.
12. He can shame them all he wants to, but they're not going to go back and retroactively change anything. It is what it is.
I think one thing for the College Football Playoff Committee is now there are so many people that are outraged. Not even just Florida State mm-hmm. fan. I'm not a Florida State fan. Mm-hmm. People that are outraged about Florida State on the outside looking in. Even Georgia on the outside looking in. Any other year, I think that a team like Georgia with the resume they have mm-hmm. would get in a four-team playoff. But with the field, it was just so competitive this year. But now I think so many more people who maybe weren't on board for an expanded mm-hmm. playoff next year are now welcoming with open arms. So it's almost like a win-win situation for mm-hmm. the College Football Playoff Committee. But I want to get your thoughts on it. Jeff is on the line with a thought on the College Football Playoff. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Enjoy the show every day of the week.
Thank you.
Appreciate you for tuning in.
Full disclosure, I'm a Tennessee fan, and I hate Alabama with the heat of 1,000 suns.
Oh, so wow.
I'm not here to shill for the Tide. But if you'll give me a minute, I'm going to make the case that they got this right. Mm-hmm. First of all, I think we have to start, like, do you believe that the injury to maybe or maybe not the best player, but definitely the most important player should be considered by the committee? And we may just have to agree to disagree on that. But this is a fact. It is in the written criteria of the committee. It can be looked up online that injuries to important players can be considered. Okay. And so I'm just going to say
that's fine, but that Florida State won their games. That should be the most important criteria, shouldn't it? Wins and losses.
Yes. But we're considering who are the best four teams mm-hmm. right now to get in, not the most deserving. And you may disagree with that, but from my view, you're looking to put in the best four teams. And the betting markets are telling us that minus Jordan Travis, Florida State is not one of the best four teams.
Well, the betting markets also told us that Oregon should have beaten Washington by double digits. The betting markets told us that Georgia should have beaten Alabama by a touchdown, but that's not what happened.
Florida State is a 14-point underdog to Georgia. I'm sorry. I feel terrible for Florida State's players. If I were a Florida State fan, I would be enraged. But the fact of the matter is, without Jordan Travis, they're not one of the four best teams. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you for your call, Jeff. I appreciate it. I just can't get on board with that. Because they beat a top 15 Louisville team last week mm-hmm. with their third-string quarterback. Does that not matter?
Yeah. I mean, you would think it did matter, you know, but that's why it's so difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why, you know, there's nothing Coach Norvell can say that's going to make his players feel any better.
Which is a shame.
Which is a shame. So I understand what the caller's saying. I get it. But this they're going to be talking about this. Mm-hmm. 20 and 30 years from now.
Absolutely.
They will be.
Absolutely. Duane is on the line with a thought on the CFP. What's up, Duane?
How's it going? I'm going to make my point, but kind of like about the other caller. I think what messed up Florida State was it was the third string quarterback in there that only completed 55 yards. And I actually watched that game, and it was hard to watch. It was almost like watching an older version Titans game, if I might say. But I would say if that second-string quarterback, Tate Roadmaker, didn't get the concussion, he was at least putting up 200 yards. I think if he would have been in the game, it would have been, you know, more points would have been scored, and then they would have had more of a fight. But just seeing that third-string quarterback messed it up. But I would say going forward, since they're going to have potentially 12 teams, I think having a in the playoffs, I think having a hierarchy, let's just say if you're undefeated,
you're in regardless. Doesn't matter. That yeah. way, the smaller schools have a shot. That way, because that way, you know, you don't think it's going to be 12 teams undefeated. And then the next criteria, okay, let's just say we got 8 teams undefeated. The next criteria is, okay, if you lose one game, then maybe strength of schedule is the main factor. I think if they go down that list, at least teams will know going forward what the expectations are if they lose just one game.
Thank you for your call, Dewan. I think that one thing that the College Football Playoff Committee doesn't want to do is have black and white rules. They mm-hmm. like it when it's gray because they can make those decisions. Mm-hmm. But you got a 12-team playoff moving forward, so it's not the criteria isn't going to be as strict. The other thing, that one thing that Tim Hasselbeck brought up, Tate Rodemaker would have most likely been healthy for the College Football Playoff. Exactly. It wasn't a season-ending injury. He was in concussion protocol. The other thing is we can nitpick quarterback performances from the entire season from all of these quarterbacks.
Yeah,
what I about mean, Michael Penix Jr.?
He hadn't been playing well.
He has not been playing well. Mm-hmm. He threw 0 touchdowns and 2 interceptions against an Arizona State team that has won 1 Pac-12 game all season long. Are we not going to put that into consideration too? Just because he's the starting quarterback doesn't mean he hasn't had a couple of bad performances himself. But I'm interested to hear Mitch Light's perspective on this. He's dialed into the CFP, into college football. He covers college football for The Athletic, and he will join us coming up next. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.